Support for this podcast and the following message come from Dignity Memorial. When your celebration of life is prepaid today, your family is protected tomorrow. Planning ahead is truly one of the best gifts you can give your family. For additional information, visit dignitymemorial.com.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. David Crosby died last month after a long illness. He was 81 years old. He was a music legend. His work paved the way for the folk rock movement. He was a founding member of The Byrds. He performed at Woodstock as a member of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And he was also an award-winning solo musician. He's been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice. Through his whole career, Crosby worked. He released an album in 2021. He was the subject of a documentary in 2019. He put out a live record in December. He was also an outspoken advocate for causes in which he believed. He was tweeting about music and climate change a day or two before he passed away. I was lucky to get to sit down with David in 2016. Back then, he had just recorded another solo album, Lighthouse. Here's the opening track, Things We Do for Love.
Was it something she said about a dream she had? One of those ones that faded so fast you knew it was bad. She dreams that she's losing you. I guess it's time. There's only so much time. Reaching through the fear that's holding her here.
These are the things, these are the things we do.
David Crosby, welcome to Bullseye. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, man.
So, where did you learn to sing?
I didn't. I never learned a darn thing. I started singing. You know, my family sang folk songs and stuff, and so we all sang together. I started singing harmony when I was about, they tell me, around 6 years old. And I started singing in clubs as a folk singer when I was about, maybe, I don't know, 14, 15, something like that. And then I started earning my living that way when I was probably about 17, 18.
Did you love folk music?
Very much, yeah.
Why?
When my family, when we got our first record player, we got we had a 78 player. We used to play classical music in the big albums, you know, where you stack up 78s. When we got one of the first LP players, 33 RPM players, and we bought some of the very first LPs were 10-inch. They weren't 12-inch. And we got Weavers, big deal, Weavers. Pete Seeger, great example. Josh White, Odetta. I learned a lot from Odetta. And a bunch of classical music and more folk music after that.
Were you on board with rock and roll music at the time?
No. No. Elvis didn't cut it for me. I just wasn't, that wasn't my thing. I mean, I knew about it, you know, and I knew about Bill Haley and the Comets. I knew about a bunch of that stuff. It didn't trigger me until I heard the Everly Brothers. The Everly Brothers just mowed me right down. I loved them.
What was it about them?
They sing harmony really fantastically well. They wrote the book on singing harmony.
I'm Jesse Thorne. You're listening to Bullseye. My guest is David Crosby. He's a founding member of The Byrds, of Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and an award-winning solo performer. Why did you leave The Byrds?
I didn't leave The Byrds. They threw me out.
Why did The Byrds throw you out?
Because I was an I don't know. You know, we were young guys who had a whole lot of success really fast, before we were even could even spell mature. And we had big egos, and I wanted a bigger piece of the pie. I wanted to be noticed more. I didn't want to just be the harmony singer. I wanted to write songs and record them, and I, you know. But I think there was a lot of egos and a lot of silliness, you know. Normal things for bands.
When you started with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, was it that same thing that drew you in, just that feeling of singing harmony with people and feeling like these pieces fit together?
Kind of, but by that time I knew a whole lot more. I knew that Stephen Stills was writing great songs. I knew that he was a major talent, and I knew that he was already writing songs that I wanted to sing. They were terrific. I'd been tossed out of the Byrds. I was hanging around L.A. I was, you know, doing whatever, and I knew Stephen, and we liked each other, and so I realized that early on that the song is the key to the entire thing. If you have a good song that you can sit down and sing to somebody with a guitar or a piano and make them feel something, then you're in business. Then you are on the map. You are on course. If you're trying to do it without having a real song, with just having June Moon Spoon or Ooh Baby, well, then you're, you know, polishing a piece of stuff. The central issue isn't there. So I realized that pretty early on. And it happened, you know, because I was listening to great writers. By that time, James Taylor was happening and was a very significant influence on me. And frankly, right after I got tossed out of the Byrds, I went to Florida and walked into a coffee house, and there was Joni Mitchell. And Joni, when she started out, was an experience that you really had. It would be hard to describe to you. I walked into the door. I stood there. She was singing one of those songs that she wrote early on. And I was just gobsmacked. I didn't know anybody could be that good.
You fell for Joni Mitchell romantically as well, right?
Yeah. It was kind of like falling into a cement mixer. She's a very turbulent girl. And I love her still. But thank God I'm not with her.
Was it scary to be in a relationship with somebody, a romantic relationship with somebody who you felt like was definitely better at the thing that you had dedicated your life to being?
Of course. Of course. And I was producing her record, her first record, at the same time. And I would write something, you know, like Guinevere, and I was pretty proud of it. And she would come home and sing me three songs that were better, and I would shrivel up a little bit. It was, truthfully, it was a massive learning experience. I think in 100 years, they'll look back and they'll say, okay, who was the best singer-songwriter? And it's either her or Bob. And she sings rings around Bob. Rings. She's a much better musician than Bob is. And I love Bob, and he's my friend, and I'm not trying to slag him. But it's Joni all the way. She's the best singer-songwriter we've had yet.
More from the late David Crosby after a quick break. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell and show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Carvana. Selling your car? Visit Carvana and enter your license plate or VIN. Answer a few quick questions and you can get a real offer in seconds. When you finalize your offer, Carvana will pick it up so you never have to leave the comfort of home. Visit Carvana.com or download the app.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wildcard, wherever you get your podcasts. Only from NPR.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. If you're just joining us, we are replaying my 2016 interview with the late David Crosby. The singer and songwriter was a founding member of The Byrds and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. He died last month at 81. Before we get back into our interview, let's hear a classic CSN song that Crosby wrote, Wooden Ships.
Say, can I have some of your purple berries? Yes, I've been eating them for 6 or 7 weeks now. I haven't got sick once. Probably keep us both alive. Wooden ships on the water, very free and easy. Easy, you know the way it's supposed to be. Silver on the shoreline, let us be. Talking about very free and easy.
I'm sure that you were smoking pot and doing psychedelics from the, you know, from the moment they were broadly available. But when did you start using other, you know, whatever, harder drugs, cocaine and more?
Early times of Crosby, Stills, and Nash, we started fooling around with cocaine. And that was a deadly mistake. Didn't all get really, really terrible until Christine, who's one of the girls that the song was written about, Christine Hinton, got killed and in a car wreck. And I had no equipment to deal with that. Nobody had ever died on me before that I loved. And so that's when I started going off the deep end with the cocaine and heroin also.
Were you scared to do it?
Scared to do what?
Were you scared to do the cocaine or scared to use
the
heroin?
Oh, hell no. No. They told us it wasn't even addictive. Funny. Most addictive substance on the planet.
Did you see other people around you hurting because of it?
Not then. Not at the beginning. No, we didn't know. We had no idea. What it turned into was a plague. It killed a whole lot of us. I once started writing down the names of people who had died because of hard drugs. And I think it was close to the end of the second page of long-form yellow legal pad, you know, that kind. Single space, second page. I was getting close to the end, and I said, I can't do this. It's too depressing. And I stopped.
How did it change your life? I mean, like, not in the grand scheme of things, but in the day-to-day of things.
It destroyed me completely. I became obsessed with it. My higher consciousness was pretty much canceled out. And, you know, I just made mistake after mistake after mistake until I went to prison. And in prison, they don't have that stuff. And so I kicked both drugs in prison, in a cell, with nothing, not even an aspirin.
When did you go to prison?
85, for a year, Texas.
I mean, that's a long time.
A year? Yeah.
I mean, it's a long time to be using. I mean, that 10 or 15 years, that's a big chunk.
Long time. But we had a lot of money, so it was easy to get in a mess. The point is, though, that when I went to prison, I did beat it. And it's a terrible way to beat it. But I went to prison, I came out, and then I did about 14 years in those 12-step rooms. And I beat it. I beat it. I've never done it since.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is singer, songwriter, guitarist David Crosby. What was it like for your relationships when you came back from prison clean and, you know, you had this 15 years of your life to deal with?
Well, you take things one at a time. The main thing was that I had by that time fallen in love with Jan Dance. And Jandy went into treatment when I went in the joint and waited for me. Now, no one, I mean no one, waits for their guy, their boyfriend, who went to prison. They immediately go start another life. Jandy didn't. She loved me, and I loved her. And we waited, and she waited for me to get out. And then we got back together and got married. We're now together 40 years.
What about the rest of it? I mean, you not only, I mean, the thing that I think of must have been.
The rest of what?
The rest of your life. I mean, the rest of the consequences of this, you know, this chunk of 10 or 15 years.
Well, you know, what you do is you throw away the old phone book, first thing. You notice who sticks around and who talks to you. You treasure the few friends you have left that you didn't blow it with, and you start over. And that's what I did. And the 12-step meetings helped a lot, can I tell you? They helped everybody.
We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a second. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Sattva. Sattva luxury mattresses are every bit as elegant as the most expensive brands, but because they're sold online, they're about half the price. Visit SAATVA.com/NPR and save an additional $200.
This message comes from The Run-Through with Vogue. Listen as designers, Vogue editors, and industry icons like Erykah Badu and Florence Pugh have in-depth conversations about fashion and culture. New episodes are released each Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh my gosh, hi, I'm Dave Holmes, host of the pop culture trivia podcast, Troubled Waters. On Troubled Waters, we play games like motivational speeches. It goes a little like this. Riley, give us an improvised motivational speech on why people should listen and subscribe to Troubled Waters.
I look around this ad and I see a lot of potential to listen to comedians such as Jackie Johnson and Josh Gondelman, and they need you to get out there and listen to them attempt to figure out sound rebus clues or determine if something is a Game of Thrones character or a city in Wales.
I have chills. I'm going to give you 15 points. All that and so much more on Troubled Waters. Find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you choose to listen to podcasts.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. We're listening back to my 2016 conversation with David Crosby. He died last month at 81. How did you feel different in your relationship with music after you got clean?
Well, I felt great because I could do it better. I mean, you know that, right? You don't. The people who think you have to be in turmoil or disturbed and high as a kite in order to make music are just wrong. They're totally wrong. You make much better music if you're straight, and you make even better music if you're happy and straight.
Is it easier or harder for you to write and to some extent to play now that you're 75? Is that right?
Well, you know, yes, and it's kind of almost inexplicable. Most people kind of fade out on writing. Which is the key thing, the writing, as they get older. Either they feel that they have said what they've got to say, or they keep trying to have another hit, or they just get lazy.
I want to play another beautiful song from your new album, Lighthouse. My guest is David Crosby, and this song's called By the Light of Common Day.
By the light of common day, things look different than they did in the starlit dark. The dark was warm and clouded. It was easy to deceive yourself.
So, David, I want to ask you about you're on Twitter, and you're really fun on Twitter. you really like actually talk to people and engage with people's questions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do too. It's a huge part of my career, but I've never gotten to the point. I'm better than I used to be, but I've never gotten to the point where the lousy part of it, where just somebody just casually insults you in a really specific way while walking past your Twitter, doesn't bother me. Is that gone for you at this point of your career? Like if somebody has some weirdly specific and maybe even semi-accurate insult to you personally on Twitter, does that roll off your back?
Pretty much. They're trolls. They're trolling. They're trying to get a reaction out of you. It's like TMZ guys. You know, they're trying to get you mad. They're trying to get a reaction. So what do? You don't do anything. You just ignore them. I never answer those people. I don't go, oh, yeah? Well, I'll tell you. Your mama's so ugly. You know, I don't do that. I don't. And, you know, there are people who ask me every single day about CSN. Don't you think you could just one more time sing the hits for us, Dave? I don't answer. I don't bother. But the trolls, no, you got to ignore the trolls, man. It's part of the thing. You have to get comfortable with that. And somebody says, yeah, you couldn't write your way out of a paperback. You just go, okay, fine. Click and go to the next one. I usually, if they're abusive, I usually just drop them. I block them right away. I don't engage. I just block them. What I like are intelligent questions. I like people who ask me something smart. And people do. People ask me sometimes brilliant things. A lot of times they'll ask me, you know, which comes first, the word or the music. And sometimes it's dumb, you know, it's, what was it really like at Woodstock, Dave? No, really, tell us. Well, it was muddy. I don't remember. Actually, here's the real truth, man. This is a breaking news, and you're the one who gets this breaking news. Nobody else knows this. Woodstock didn't happen. They faked it. No, I'm telling you the truth. They faked it in the same stage that they faked the moon landing. It didn't happen.
Are you...
crazy? Yeah.
Are you comfortable with the idea of Crosby, Stills, and Nash, this thing that has been part of who you are publicly and part of your artistic life for whatever it is now, coming up on 50 years, being a thing that was rather than a thing that isn't or even a thing that will be?
Completely. I'm completely comfortable with it, man. What happens to bands is that when you start them, they're pretty exciting. And then if they succeed, it's very exciting. And the audience loves you. And that is a joy. And, you know, and we did it. And we did good work. I'm proud of CSN work. And I'm very proud of the CSNY work. I'm proud of the Birds. It's all good work. But bands devolve. From the point that they peak, they devolve. It heads for just doing it for the money. And pretty soon, it's just turn on the smoke machine and play your hits. Well, that's not good enough. Not for me, anyway. It's not good enough. There's no excitement there. There's no joy. There's no forward motion. Zero. And that isn't acceptable to me.
Well, I'm absolutely thrilled. And this sounds insincere because everything that comes out of my mouth sounds insincere, but it's really sincere. I'm absolutely thrilled that you have this much verve.
Thank you, man.
And it's really nice to get to talk to you. I really appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure, man. Totally.
David Crosby from 2016. Let's go out with one more classic. This is Guinevere.
Guinevere had green eyes like yours, milady, like yours. She'd walk down through the garden in the morning after it rained.
That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. Here in Los Angeles, my producer, Kevin Ferguson, was driving his car when the driver in front of him threw a banana peel out the window. Kevin drove over it and was very glad that Mario Kart is not real. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. Our production fellows at Maximum Fun are Tabitha Myers and Brianna Paz. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Our interstitial music is composed and provided to us by DJ W. also known as Dan Wally. Our theme song is by The Go Team. It's called Huddle Formation. Our thanks to The Go Team and to Memphis Industries, their label, for sharing it with us. Bullseye is also on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Find us there, follow us. We'll share with you all of our interviews. And I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
On the wall.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
She shall be free.
This advertisement comes from our paid sponsor, Fundrise. High interest rates mean that real estate assets are available at a discount compared to previous valuations. The Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to expand its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. Add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio at fundrise.com/NPR. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the fund before investing. Read the prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This message comes from NPR sponsor Betterment. The drama of having an enemy-turned-lover is never chill, but your investing portfolio should be. Betterment is the investing app that lets you be totally chill about your finances. Their automated tech makes it easy to get in the market and stay in the market. Save the drama for that moment when you realize your mortal enemy is actually your soulmate. Betterment. Be invested. And totally chill. Learn more at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
A former president found guilty while running for re-election. For a story this big, one podcast is not enough. Here at NPR, we've got you covered from every angle. You can get the news as it happens and legal analysis on the podcast Trump's Trials. And for all the latest on what it means for the 2024 election, head on over to the NPR Politics podcast. Find Trump's Trials and the NPR Politics podcast wherever you get your podcasts.